This year is brought to you by Eshel Publications. Eshel Publications is a non-profit organization dedicated to spreading the Torah, Shiurim, and Sefarim of Rabbi Aaron Lapiansky. For sponsorships or more information, visit eshelpublications.com.
People that lived in the very early Tkufa. The Tkufa that we're talking about is sort of post-Gaonim, pre-Rishonim. And we're going to speak about somebody that many of you probably never heard the name. But all of you who sing as Miris, the person's name is Donish Ben Laprat. He is the Mechaber of Dror Yikra, and he's the Mechaber of Dvayaser, that we say in the Dvayaser that we say by a chasana, by the benching. He was Mechaber, I assume, many more, but we don't have, not much was left over, but his life was very fascinating, and a lot went on. So let's start the story a little earlier. We spoke about Ben Isadia Goyen. Ben Isadia Goyen lived from 882 to 942, about approximately those days, And the setting will start with him. Now, I always knock it to side and say where I got my information from. So the best of those that I found monograph on him is somebody named David Kahana. David Kahana was a Jewish, traditional, of some sort, person. He lived in the late 1800s, early 1900s. He was a famous researcher. He put out a lot from Ebenezer, from Donish, from others. That was his field. And like I said, it's a monograph. Everything is has the mocker, and the mocker is actually the words of Donash and Menachem. We'll see soon where it comes from. So that's the source, is their own words. So Ben Isadia Goyen lived there, but Isadia Goyen lived, he wrote a dictionary of sorts, or some sort of Sefer Agron, which had list of words in Tanakh, listed alphabetically in different ways, and it was like the rudiments of a dictionary. He had, I think, 90 words or so were unknown, and he gave a hesber for those words. He was the beginning of the first that we have that would be somewhat of a dictionary on Tanakh of some sort. We'll switch to next person. Was somebody named Menachem Ben Sorek, who was born pretty much the same time as Donash, 920, and he was he came to Spain. In Spain, there was a very interesting person, Reb Chastai Ibn Shafrat. He was a very wealthy person, extremely well connected with the government. He was the Sultan's something or other underling, and he basically was a patron of Spanish Jewry. Might be worth speaking about him once. And he, one of the things was, he tried to establish in Spain a Torah center. Until now, in the time of the Gaonim, Torah had been in Baghdad. In Iraq, not Baghdad so much, Iraq. There was in North Africa, Kirwan, and it was falling apart, dying, decaying, and Spain was the rising sun, and he was busy bringing people or patronizing people. He did a lot of good, and he brought in. This person named Menachem Ben Sorek, who sat and wrote a dictionary on Tanakh. He was a patron of it, this Chastai Ibn Shafrat, and he therefore brought him, and he sat al Torah v'al Avoda working on his dictionary. This is actually, it's in here. You can look at it later if you want. And this is called Machberes Menachem, very famous. And that was the first real dictionary. Vayhi Ayoim, somebody named Donis Ben Lebrat. Donis Ben Lebrat was born in 920. It's not clear. There are two cities constantly mentioned, Fez and Baghdad. Those are the two cities. So one is in Morocco, one is in Iraq. In case you know your geography, they're quite far from each other. He was born in one, grew up in the other one, came back to it again. There's a lot of unclarity, but it's clear that he had roots in both places. He also writes, he calls him Besadia Goyen, he calls him Skeni, my grandfather, but it's not clear at all that it's a grandfather of his. It's very likely that it's just a Rebbe. In either case, this person sent a letter to Chastoyim Shafrat. The letter, and again, these are printed. This is where we know a lot of our information. The letter starts off with one song. He wrote it all in poetry. One song was Shevach Vayidah to this Im Shafrat, to, you know, how, what kind of wonderful person he is. I mean, on and on and on and on and on. He would have been a master fundraiser. It was just incredible, like how he's like, mamish, like heaven, incredible. Then he writes about Donash, about Menachem Ben Sorak. He writes that he starts off with Divrei Shevach, that it's wonderful and great and fantastic. And then he writes very negatively, very sharp, with 200 places where he thinks he missed the boat in a sefer, and he's an apikoros, and he's a rasha, and I'm aretz, everything you want. That's written, and it's very sharp, very, 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 you know, really, really rough. Vayi ayoyim, on Shabbos, Ibn Shafrat sent down, I don't know, people to his house, to Menachem Ben Sorak's house. They threw him out bodily, they ripped his hair out, they demolished the house and sent him off. He writes that, Menachem writes it in a letter to Rav Chastoy. It's not clear, the connection between the two is not understood. He doesn't write that it's because of him that it happened. Rav Chastoy writes a letter, Menachem Ben Sorak writes a letter, a very, very painful letter to Rav Chastoy, and saying, you know, you're so wonderful, you're so good to me, and all of a sudden something happened, I never had a chance to defend myself, I never said anything, why didn't she ask me, I don't know even what it's all about, how come, and so on and so forth. Very, very heart-wrenching. The understanding by everyone is that it was a result of that letter that was written. And he wrote a very, very sharp letter, and that was that. In the difference in the two, in the Shitas at least, so Menachem Ben Sorak tried to explain everything from Minei Obey. In other words, the words in Hebrew he tried to explain in context, or comparing it to other Hebrew words. That was he did not believe in comparing it to languages other than Aramaic.
Is this the Menachem Rashi always quotes when he finds?
Yes, this is Menachem Rashi, and Rashi quotes. Both Donash and Menachem are quoted in Rashi and other Rishonim, at least. I did a computer search probably 50 times easy, Donash alone, and Menachem about 50 times, very quoted. Very wrote a lot, both of them. He brings both of them, and sometimes he's not crazy. But Donash, so he also had some ha'ara on Rabbi Besadia Goyen, and Donash writes what a chutzpah that he starts off with Skeni Rabbi Besadia Goyen. It's ironic because Donash afterwards also wrote ha'aras and ha'sagas on that. So it's hard to know exactly what his taina was. But His tainus in Ashkofa and Kfir and stuff like that seem to be misplaced. In other words, he had written, it explains certain words, loy doesn't mean with aleph, doesn't mean with a vav, if there's a kriyin as a ksiv, and he tainted it would come out that things that are asar amut, very hard to think that that's what Menachem meant. He was writing from a diktuk point of view, what it would be, it would, no one, I don't know, that was, He also says the molak means a shachat. So he said, okay, so he's not because it's stuki, because malik is not shechita. But is that what he meant? Al kaponim, be it as it may, Donash succeeded in getting him out, and Menachem sort of became just a wandering person, and he's kind of became a favorite. I guess he was supported also by Rastoy. The Talmidim, so Menachem never answered him. His Talmidim sent back a whole written thing against Donash. Really, really nasty stuff. And knocking his sefer, knocking him, and so on. Talmidim of Donash weren't going to take this city down. And they sent back a fiery letter against that. I guess these people took the diktat very seriously. They weren't going to mess with Shvanoz, Shvanoch, stuff like that. This was real stuff. This continued. So this was in the 900s. These were Talmidim. Ibn Ezra wrote, which was much later, it was 100 plus years later, wrote defending Reb Sadia Gaon against any of the Ha'aris of Menachem and Donash. The Rabbeinu Tam, and this is also here, Rabbeinu Tam, the same Rabbeinu Tam in the sugyas that we're dealing with, Yiyush, and this actually was into TikTok, real big time. He wrote a sefer, Machria, which is Machria between the Machlokesen. The vast majority of them, he was Machria like Menachem, against Donish's Horus. Then Rabbi Yosef Kimchi, who was Radak's father, wrote a Sefer, and he was Machria like Donish and was Machlokesen. So the beginning of a lot of the Machlokesen were in Dikduk. This began the era of Dikduk, and those two were the fathers of Dikduk. Like I said before, Rashi and other Rishonim quote them many, many times. They quote them both. They don't seem to be especially taking sides one or the other, and they're both considered to be the pillars of explanation. The Donash came from Baghdad. Baghdad, Morocco, he felt that Arabic should be used to help determine what's going to be the appropriate meaning of a word. Menachem did not, so he felt, he said, because Menachem doesn't know Arabic, that's why he doesn't use it. The other shita was, Arabic is two steps away. Aramaic is one step away from Lashon Kodesh, it makes sense. Arabic is very far away. Echatesa, we should use other languages. This was all part of the big package of the whole mess. It's very hard if you read the Lashonos, so you can read what it says. It's printed. It's hard to read. It's very hard Hebrew. Everyone does their best to be as obscure as possible. With like, if you think P is hard, these are the Bali Piyot to argue with each other. So stuff is really, really rough to figure out. But so the modern day people try to make sense out of it. So some people accuse Donash of being very mean-spirited, very angry, nasty, conniving, etc. person. And others say, no, he was the Ish Emes, the search for Emes. You have no way to say anything. Now the letter to Chasdoi is by today's standards, it's mind-boggling how much chanufa. But it was not uncommon in those days. That's how you wrote to the notable. You wrote with on and on and on. You see sometimes in Tshuva Sfarim, in that era, the way they write addressing somebody, there's an omud of honorifics. That was a lashon. The fact, and he starts off the letter to Donash writing how, you know, wonderful he is. A few lines about how wonderful Donash is, and then he says, "But," you know, and then he goes to town really very. That was also maybe that was the way people wrote in those days. I don't know. You know, it's like to make the judgment calls and then to say who's what when. That's beyond. I do want to speak a little bit about some of the innovations that there was innovation Donash made, and I think it's a very important innovation and it's important to understand it. So in terms of Dikduk, Donash came up with a few ideas that became Kavua. A difference between a binyan kal and a binyan kaved, which means the same word it has a strong tense and a strong tense and conjugation and a weak mushal. Shavar means to break. Shiber means to smash. And many words like that, where you have shamar means to watch. You know, like when you're watching something, shimer means to preserve something, like shimurim, shmarim. These are all, he was the one that was oimed on the difference between the two. He labeled it, gave it a name, a difference between transitive and intransitive verbs. They also spoke about shrush, the concept of a shoresh. Now, I want to explain something important in this area. When you come across a word that you don't know what it means, how do you figure it out? So one way is through context. My father used to say, they used to say in Europe that the word chamra in the Gemara means a donkey or it means wine. How do you know when it means donkey and when it means wine? So the answer is when it's on the table, it's wine. When it's in the stable, it's a donkey. So the context in a pasuk will give you an idea of what it means. Sometimes the pasukim, they bring something and there's no context. They just can't figure out what it means. So you want to look at words that are close to it, similar to it. But you have to be able to understand which letters are significant in the similarity. So if the letters that are similar are not significant, then it's not the same thing. So you need to identify the root letters that are really the letters that mean the thing itself. And therefore, finding out what those roots are was very important. Today, this comes from a door to later, we know we speak of three-letter roots and we've labeled them and so on. They also had a concept of a two-letter root, a one-letter root, but these are very important. They're not just stuff that you have to learn. If you want to determine what a word means that you don't know, you'll have to figure it out by looking at the roots of that. So they all worked, and the shitas were very similar. There wasn't that much difference as far as roots go and things of that nature. They organized their dictionaries around roots. But there was one innovation that Donash made that really was a chiddush. Not everyone agreed that it's a good idea, but he brought it into Jewish liturgy. In Lashon Kodesh, if you take a look in Chumash and in Novi, there are shiras. Shira is a type of language that's not there to tell you information. It's to convey feelings, beauty, thanks, wailing. It's to convey emotions. There is nowhere in the Torah rhyming words. There is nothing in the Torah language, in Tanakh, that resembles any of the modern tools used for Shira. It's just the words themselves, the quality of words, and the way it's written, you know, with spaces, that gives away Shira. The Kalir, who was, by most Shitas, somewhere in the middle of the Gaonim, Rav Elazar Kalir, was the one that started having rhyming endings. Rhyme, the concept of a rhyme, that's the first one that we know is Rav Elazar Kalir. The Donash brought in another chiddush, and this is taken from Arabic. The Arabs had a lot of nice songs and so on. And one of the most important elements of those songs was the rhythm, the fact that you can have each piece of each sentence has the same space, and that allows for a certain cadence to build up. For those of you who've davened for the Omid and have to try to stuff words into a song or vice versa, you'd know that some songs are very easy to stuff. Somehow they'll go very easy, and some don't go so easy. And you have a hard time. For instance, well, the easiest one is Ko'echsov cannot fit anything whatsoever in the world because it's very simple. There's no... The stanzas are totally uneven. It's not shaykh. It's not built for a song. It's built as powerful words of expression, but it's just not built for a song. So having the same exact amount of syllables is very important, and having having it grouped in a similar way, it's very critical to get that beautiful type of flow that you can get. The two elements of that, if you'll take a look in like a very fancy siddur, like in the more academic siddurim or machzorim, they'll have at the ones who piyut yofe from so and so, vehu it's yosid echadim shtei tnuas v'oid yosid, something like that. They'll have the word yosid and tnua. And I'll tell you how many yosids and how many tnuas. And sometimes if you look at some of the real academic ones, they'll have squiggles. You'll see like lines like this and squiggles like this at the beginning. What does that mean? So there are two, like I said before, there are two types of syllables. How you group the syllables is really going to give you the ability to build a certain rhythm. So that you have to have the same amount of syllables, that's pashit. But there's another piece also. There are two types of syllables in Lashon Kodesh. There are syllables that are one vowel. It could be one or two letters. So for instance, mayim is two syllables. Mayim, that's simple. So you have either one or two letters. There's one more hechatimtza, and that is a shvona or a chataf is considered a semi-syllable. It doesn't take up the amount of time and emphasis that a full syllable. So for instance, say the word de'e. So the shvona of the dalet, de'e, with the ayin, de'e, is a large syllable. That's called a yosed, and the small one's called a tenuah. It moves quicker, this is bigger. And therefore, you have two syllables, and he would establish a type of piyut where this would be critical. So let me give an example. We have two dror yikra. Every single one of those lines starts with a shvona dror yikra ni'im diroish nita droch nesots and so on, and then. So nesots, so droch, these are all nesots, droch, are all one syllable that consists of the shvona with one. So, right, you have two regular syllables, be'af, bisoch batsra, bisoch karmi, ve'os yashemi. You always must follow this pattern. So this makes life very, very difficult because you're so limited in how you can use it, which forced him to distort the dictum a little bit. For instance, ni'im shimchem, it shouldn't be ni'im shimchem with a shvona, it should be no'im shimchem. And that's the right way to say the dikduk. Noim shimchem, your name is pleasant, or kemoi bavas. There's no word bavas. Bavas is it's going to bavas is besmichus only, bavas enoi. But if it was said, it would have ruined it to do it any other way. So lemaisa he brought in a format which is extremely beautiful. It's one of the reasons why Dror Yikra goes very well. When you sing it, you feel it's very crisp. You feel that the words and everything go very crisp. it was engineered that way. It was done that way. On the other hand, it means that you have to distort some of the diktuk, ironically. The Kuzari, which was later a bit, he was very upset with this. And in his conversation with the Malka Kuzarim, he says that this whole thing was imported from the Goyim. It's not Jewish. It doesn't belong there. And it's so on and so forth. That's basically so this format, we only have two examples of it, but you can feel, and other people imitate it. Then you'll take a look in Piyutim and so on. They'll be writing a lot of times on top, what's the structure? How many yasids, how many tnuas, and there are kavurik arrangements that are pleasant to the ear to hear. So you had this tug of war between introducing a rhythm which was very pleasant, but which would force the language to really be distorted. It's not grammatically correct 100%.
That's why they didn't like it?
What?
That's why people did not like what he did?
Because they felt stomach. They brought in a goyish thing into it and so on and so forth. That was his... Al-Kaponim, it's a very fascinating part of history. The Diktuk Wars, it's very hard to believe how upset people get on these things, but it was important to them. Like I said, for Rashi, brings both Donash and Menachem, just even, you know, they brings them both. He'll write whichever one it is. He calls Rebbe Menachem in one place. I didn't see the same, but Donash, not a riot, I didn't look that carefully, but he brings it wherever he feels is right, and he, it's interesting. Someone pointed out Rashi will many times say a taich that Menachem says without mentioning his name, and the reason is because it was so pashit, it had become like part of this is how everybody learned it. They didn't bother to do it. But understanding the personalities involved, it's very hard 1,000 years later to understand exactly what went on. But we do know that diktuk is very important in terms of understanding what you're saying, in terms of understanding how to say it. It's the Rambam says the reason why Shkastola gave us tefillah, why they made a set tefillah, is because people's expression Lashon Kodesh became very garbled and very bad. So if we don't know what we're saying Lashon Kodesh and we don't have the right pronunciation, we're not doing much good with that way. It's beautified a lot the Zmiris. People copied it. That became very standard. That to have that type of meter and to pay attention to the acoustics of the Zmiris, not just the word. He was the father of all of that. That's the Pasha Sos of Donash Balabrat. If you want to take a look, this is Yeshivas. This has most of it. I assure you, you will have an excruciatingly tough time figuring out, because everything is written poetically. It's written, you know, with a lot of poetry, and everyone did his best to translate. So it's not written so, you know, openly, but you'll see it and you'll get it. You'll if you take a look, you get a feel for it. Okay.